It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, do you know if I do it right? It sounds like I'm in like the other room, and I slowly get closer, walk up. I need some, what's it called? Foley. I need some foley.
You need some foley?
Of steps. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that is the audio equivalent of a slice of tonkatsu wrapped in a scallion pancake, both cold and left over from the night before.
That's how we planned it.
Yes. No, that's actually what I had for dinner tonight. I was eating leftovers, and I had leftover tonkatsu, and I had leftover scallion pancake, and I would wrap one in the other, and it was really tasty, actually. I was surprised. And cold. People freak out that I eat cold Chinese food, but I'll eat cold just about any food.
Mm.
The only exception is usually if it's something that congeals in a way that, like, is unappealing. Mm. And even then, my definition of what is unappealing in that is probably much narrower than most people. But pretty much, and that's not to say that I am opposed to reheated food. I'm just usually too lazy to do it, and I really like the cold food. It's good. Some foods are almost better cold sometimes. If you get the right pizza,
yeah,
that can be better cold.
I've heard people say that about pizza, yeah.
Certain pizzas, not all pizzas. It's funny, I probably have told this story before on here. So, I spent my college years doing work study at our, we called it the Forum Grill, because our student union building was called the Forum, and there was this little food counter there called the Grill. So it was the Forum Grill.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we had was pizza. And it's very much in that convenience store sort of way, where there was this machine that had a heating element and then just shelves that you put pizza trays on and they spun around.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. So, end of the night, which for some reason I frequently worked closing shifts, if there's any pizza left in there, we just got it. And we could take it home with us. And sometimes, I mean, you want to be careful and you don't purposely, like, make too much. But but sometimes, you know, you go home with 5-6 slices of pizza. And it was okay. It wasn't great pizza. We made it there. Like, we had the dough and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we made it there. But it wasn't that exciting. Until one time when, for some reason, I actually got the pizza, like, fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not the stuff that had been sitting there for the last hour on the heating element. It was way better.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, I thought this was really mediocre pizza. But it's actually really good. It gets mediocre when you let it sit under a heat lamp for a couple hours.
Like things do.
Exactly. Yeah, you noticed our new kitty condo over here?
Is it new, or did you just move it from somewhere else?
Hopefully my mother-in-law doesn't listen. It was a gift a few years ago in a box, unassembled.
Mm.
And the problem is we didn't have any place to assemble it. But now, thanks to he cleaned our house, we do. And it's not quite done. It was missing one screw.
Mm.
So that's why there's nothing at the top there on that one pole. It should also have a platform.
Mm.
And the kitties aren't sure what to think. I'm really surprised to see Twiglet doing all this stuff, because he normally stays pretty low on it. He's not a big climber in his old age. Ezzy is frequently where he is now, or even the one above that, and she uses it to look out the window. My concern now... Oh, good job, Ezzy. Good jumping. My concern now is that they aren't going to want to be there as it gets cold, so it'll be spring before they really get used of it.
Well, there's the heating vent right underneath.
Yes, there's the heating vent right there, and that's the plan. And then when summer happens, we shift it like 2 feet over, and then the air conditioning is no longer blocked.
Mm.
And then it works out pretty good. But yeah, Trish sprinkled it with catnip to get them going for it. They seem to enjoy it, but I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's there. Twiglet's way more into this bench thing here. He'll lay here for a long time. But I think because it's by the window, they sort of have gone for it. For those of you just joining us, welcome to the Cat Hour.
We haven't even said our names yet.
Yes. Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 243.
Dang, people. All right. Yeah, for those of you just joining us again, second time, welcome. Here's how this thing works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. People like yourselves. Write into that email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Did you shave just before you came here?
Yes.
Because I was going to say, you have an incredibly close shave right now.
Yes.
Your face looks like a baby's butt. And at the moment, it looks like a really well-shaved baby's butt. it was a hack move, but I had to follow that one through. I couldn't help myself. It was pretty hack. I apologize. For the low quality of comedy, not for the insult. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Right, right.
Anyway, people write into the Magical Talking Hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, topics, questions, mostly questions, some topics. Not a lot of comments, but some. I just feel like I've been lying all these years. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of comments, per se, because they're going to get drawn out, and that would be weird. Anyway, the hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. I didn't prepare. It's Edwardian servants. I feel like that was a good save. Draw.
I think you've used it before.
The note cards. Well, fuck you then. draw the note cards out of the hat at random. Read them on the air. Talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. But really, that's a very small part of the
show.
Yeah,
it actually ends up being a little part of it.
Yes. Speaking of which, how was your weekend? Or week.
Thing,
including the Halloween part, so.
Yeah. Halloween, we went up to Clear Lake. Spent time with the brother-in-law, and that was a good time. Decorated a little bit. We didn't get very many trick-or-treaters at the lake house there. I don't know what that's about, although the thing is, Clear Lake is one of those towns whose population...
Indian burial ground.
I know. Whose population doubles, maybe triples, in the summer, you know.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot fewer people there right now. The docks are being all taken out and everything, so...
He means the doctors in Clear Lake are being systematically murdered.
I mean, I can imagine living there and thinking, okay, kids, we're going to take you out trick-or-treating, but there's no point going to any of the houses on the lake because they're all empty because the people only live there during the summer, you know.
And the doctors have been killed.
And the house is right on the lake that we were in, so that's probably why we didn't get
you
very many people.
You should have put up your Halloween lights so people knew.
We had.
Like big strings of light, garland lights, you know.
We put black lights in the porch light, three porch lights, or, you know, two lights on the garage and one next to the front door. We put black lights in there with some stuff next to it that would glow. And then we had two large jack-o'-lanterns on the right next to the door. And leading up to the door, we had six small pumpkins they're jack-o'-lanterns, but they didn't have like faces on them. My wife and her brother used a drill to drill holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
So they looked very decorative, you know.
That's pretty hardcore all around. That's some pretty serious.
In the lake house, past the front door is like a, what do you call it? I want to say a foyer, but it's not really a foyer. There's a small room that before you get to the living room where someone would take their boots off and their coats off or whatever.
I think foyer might be appropriate. Okay. Entryway also.
And there's another door to get into the living room.
Chamber.
So it's kind of like a small closet, basically, so we had a black light in there and all kinds of cool decorations in there for when the door opened and, you know, kids wanted candy and stuff. But mm-hmm. We just didn't have very many kids
showing up. Dumbass parents.
But,
or you were too scary. They were like, I'm not going there.
But we
there's genuinely ghosts there.
But we still had a good time, and we decided we needed to do some shopping for the next morning after trick-or-treating was over, so we just kept our costumes on and went to the store to shop for the stuff we needed, and we had a good time. We watched, a couple movies we watched while we were there. We watched The New Poltergeist.
Ooh.
Which wasn't very good.
Yeah, no, I heard that wasn't very good.
And we watched The Conjuring, which I think I talked about last time that we watched it, and this was the third time we'd seen it, but yeah. We didn't know if he'd seen it, so we took it up there. And it's all right. But yeah, it was a good time all the way around. Not much else really to talk about. Now, you did something different this year for Halloween.
Well, we didn't.
Oh, you did this.
I'm not really sure what happened.
Okay.
But first, mid-afternoon, was like, I need to lay down and take a nap.
Oh.
And I did, but I got up at like 4, so there was still time. But I come out to the family room, and Trish is asleep on the couch.
Mm.
And I just let her sleep, so it's like almost 6 before she wakes up.
Mm.
So we're not doing nothing. Mm. So we just ordered delivery in. We didn't even really want to deal with the trick-or-treaters. But despite having the porch light off, some still came, so we gave stuff to them. Because we had candy. We just didn't feel like being vigilant.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got an idea in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Because a few years ago, I like freaky movies within certain kind of... I usually can't see them in the theater because I do get scared. But I like, you know, I talk about it. I watch cheesy horror movies and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Producer in general does not, but she, like many people, when it's Halloween, thinks maybe we should watch a scary movie.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah,
I think that's how we saw The Descent, which I still highly recommend. Especially, actually, to you guys, I would recommend it.
We might have seen that one, but I'll have to look.
The spelunking one, all female cast.
Might have seen it.
They made a sequel that I think was terrible, but whatever. So I'm sitting here thinking, okay, 2 or 3 years ago, we tried to watch Let the Right One In, the Scandinavian vampire movie that was so successful that Americans had to remake it mm-hmm. and call it Let Me In, I think. It had Chloe Moritz in it. But the original was the one that was so popular that prompted the remake. And we tried a few years ago, but it was right when Netflix was getting sued to all hell because of their subtitling issue, like them not captioning stuff.
We experienced the exact same thing. We tried to watch that very movie, and I think another movie we tried to watch around the same time had the same problem. It was the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Okay.
And the captioning sort of went behind the letterbox.
Yeah, you couldn't read it.
So little bits would fall
yep.
in. But
yep.
So we had given up, and I'm like, they've got to have that shit fixed by now. And I know it's still on Netflix because when I'm browsing through horror movies, it shows
really?
Up. So I'm like, let's watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
So we did.
Yeah.
And I very much did not enjoy it. But I think it's not the fault of the movie.
Oh.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. It's not a scary movie.
Hmm.
At all. There's nothing scary about this movie. It is technically a horror movie in that there are instances with a lot of blood and gore.
Oh.
And I don't think this is a spoiler. It is a vampire movie. So the combination of those two things, I think, requires by law for you to call it a horror movie. But I don't really think of it. It doesn't feel that way to me.
Mm.
It is much more sort of a drama about the relationship between a vampire and a young kid who lives nearby.
Mm.
And given that, I feel like it is probably a very good movie, and I kind of want to watch it again with my expectations better set.
Mm.
At the time, looking for a scary horror movie, I was like, this is not doing it for me at all.
Mm.
And I was very disappointed about that. But I think it is good if you go into that with that degree. And there is definitely blood and gore, but that's sort of not the point.
Yeah, right.
It is only ever done to sort of underline the inhuman elements of being a vampire, you know, and there's not a lot of backstory. It's all almost fable-like in its way.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they don't ever say when it is. but it's not present day.
Okay.
And for a long time, I was having this problem of, let's call it, in the past or just European. Because there was a bunch of weird, like, clothing choices and stuff, and just and lots of smoking in restaurants. And I'm like, is this set in the past, or are they just European? Because it's hard. Well, and it helped that it was Scandinavian. If it was Eastern Europe, I just straight up would have assumed it was just European.
Well, but
I'm like, Scandinavians, you know, are in this century.
Right. There are some films I've watched that take place in rural England that I think, oh, is this like just post-World War II? And then something, you see something and realize, oh, wait, they have cell phones. This is now.
There's a cultural difference that is totally legit. But luckily for me, in this one, and again, because I don't speak the language, there's a TV playing in the background at one point, and the stuff is not very loud. I probably would not have noticed it had it been in English. But there are subtitles, and they reference Prime Minister Brezhnev.
Oh, okay.
Or Premier Brezhnev. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, that places it then, and that explains so much. but other than that, there is no reference to the timing. So it was a little weird. And in fact, about a third of the way through, I said, is this in the past or is it just European? And Trisha's like, I'm not sure either. So yeah, saw that. Yeah, not much happened Halloween per se. The neighbor children got their first ever experience with the Switch Witch. Are you familiar with the Switch Witch? I feel like I was not familiar with the Switch Witch until a couple days before, because FXX has been spamming the Simpsons Halloween episodes, the Treehouse of Horror episodes.
Okay.
All that week before Halloween, and I watched a shit ton of them. And one that I think is just a year or two old that maybe I hadn't even seen before had a reference to the Switch Witch in it.
Okay.
And I think that may be the only time it's ever come up for me until I go next door and say, well, how was the candy haul? And Kirk says, well, the Switch Witch visited. And I was like, huh? And apparently, there's probably variations on the Switch Witch. But the Switch Witch is a mythic figure on par with the Tooth Fairy, Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, associated with Halloween. And the Switch Witch specifically shows up. I don't know how much is in person and how much is like while you sleep kind of shit. I don't know. Probably depends on your costuming budget. But the Switch Witch shows up and takes a portion of your candy, which I believe is usually the majority of your candy.
Okay.
In the case of the neighbor children, it was all but 16 pieces each. And apparently what else they had was definitely more than 16 pieces. And replaces it with toys. And in the case of the neighbor children, it was two Monster High Frightmare dolls for the girl, and two Transformers Rescue Bots for the boy. And they love it.
They do.
I think because they like toys. Mm-hmm. But they also, especially the littlest one, has a near religious devotion to candy. So what I actually think is part of it is that their brain, you know how there are some numbers that are just too big for you? Like if I tell you $1 billion, that doesn't really mean anything to you. I feel like 16 might be too high for them. I feel like they think 16 pieces of candy is a lot of candy. And it came up because we were over there that night, and Lil was like, can I have candy for dessert? And they said, yeah. I said, how many pieces can I have? And they said, you can have two. So he starts picking them out, and his mom is like, now, if we keep doing this, it's going to be just over a week, and you'll be out. So maybe sometimes you don't want to eat two. Maybe he's not listening at all. So that's part of my guess, is that they don't really comprehend that 16 doesn't last that long, because they've never counted before their candy. But we'll see. But, I mean, they really liked their toys, too. Their toys were cool to them, so I found that interesting. No such thing existed in my day. I think I had what is the more common one that I recall, which is whatever until Thanksgiving, and then whatever's left you throw away. I definitely think it may not have specifically been Thanksgiving, but I feel like there was a point out there. It was like, eat whatever you want, and then at this point, the rest is gone.
Well, we didn't have candy really any other time of the year except Halloween and Easter.
Yeah, Easter.
You know, my mom made baskets every year, and that had a little candy in it. But really, in terms
Christmas
of
stockings, didn't have a lot of candy.
No candy. I mean, there was candy around at Christmas, but it's just no. The candy was, and we didn't eat sweet cereals or anything like that. So, candy was the big times for candy were Easter and Halloween, and Halloween even more than Easter.
Oh yeah, Halloween. It's the defining characteristic in most cases.
And the Halloween candy would last. It would last a long time. We never had any thrown out or anything, but we also didn't get a huge amount. I mean, we had friends that would talk about how, yeah, I had a whole grocery bag, two grocery bags full of candy. Yeah. We didn't go, you know, Melcher Dallas was just 2 miles away. We didn't go in there to trick or treat. We had, mom and dad took us to all of the friends of dad's folks just out in the country there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't very much candy. It might last a month if we were slow eating it.
Can I help you, Miss?
And I mean really slow, like one piece of candy every other day or some crazy thing like that.
I think that's part of the neighbor children are adorable. And on top of that, people nowadays are kind of overindulgent. And so between Halloween, Christmas, Easter, the homecoming parade, they get literally buckets of candy thrown at them in the homecoming. Between all of that, they just basically have a constant supply of candy that their parents monitor and, you know, dole out slowly, but it's slow enough that there's just always candy. So I think this is a big change for them. And I mean, in the past, we had the homecoming parade and they would dole out that candy. And then at Halloween, they would use whatever was left at that as the trick-or-treater candy. And the kids didn't care because the kids knew they were getting a whole bunch more candy.
Well, you know, even though we didn't have candy that often and we did look forward to having some around Halloween, I would easily have traded every piece of it for a toy.
Yeah.
Easily I would have. No, that wouldn't even have been a question.
I think by and large, kids get the permanent versus, you know, momentary in that sense. It's not very abstract at that point.
Well,
candy, you'll eat it, it'll right, be gone. You have this toy, which will last forever.
Well, the thing is, some kids, when they don't get very much candy, it becomes a big thing.
Yeah.
But for us, or at least for me, not getting very much candy meant I never really developed a taste for it, so it wasn't that big a deal.
At work today, I said, talked about the Switch Witch and explained it, and she was like, that sounds like terrible. That sounds horrible to dispose of candy like that. And I was like, well, the kids liked it. She's like, it's candy. It's Halloween.
Yeah.
I
mean, I love trick-or-treating.
Disclaimer, the person I'm talking about is a listener, so I was paraphrasing. I may not have gotten the quotes correct.
I loved trick-or-treating, and even if I thought getting all this candy, I was just going to go home and have a toy, have it exchanged for a toy later, I wouldn't care. It's still fun to get it, you know.
I enjoyed trick-or-treating.
And, you know, it
to the degree that I used my friend's younger siblings and would take them out as an excuse for me to dress up and also
I mean,
longer than was age appropriate.
I dressed in a costume to take the kids out for, you know, 10, 12 years. But what did the kids wear? You didn't say what their costumes were.
I'm trying to remember. I didn't actually get to see them because the timing was weird. Normally they come over here first and then they go over to Coralville because they knew the houses over there and stuff because they used to live over there.
Mm.
But this year they did a thing where they went up to visit the mother's mother and trick-or-treated up there, so they were gone by like the middle of the day, I guess. So we didn't see, but I did know what the costumes were. I'm trying to remember. I've already forgotten. I feel like they were good. I don't know. We've taken a lot of time here. I do want to pause briefly and state I finished Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. Did I say that last time?
Nope. I think you did say that, yeah.
And it was an incredibly underwhelming ending. Like, really kind of shocked. I was like, that's the end? Really? We're done? All right. And it's one of those games that you can keep playing afterward. But there's nothing new except this one dungeon that you couldn't get into before. And you get in there, and it's a pretty moderate dungeon. There is nothing very exciting. There's no particular amazing treasure. There's no story to the dungeon. It's just a place. The only interesting thing is there's a hidden door and you go in and you fight two things called chicken overlords, which are just the exact same models as the chickens, but they like can fight a little more, but then they die and they didn't drop anything or whatever. They were just there. It was weird. So this was a really unimpressive ending.
We played the DLC. Dragon Age Inquisition has a special, they have three DLCs, and the last one is like 2 years in the future, and it's supposed to be like the end of the story.
Yeah.
Played it. Eh, it was all right. It was okay.
DLC can frequently be hit and miss.
It was okay.
But so now I'm playing Assassin's Creed Rogue.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which is essentially Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Like, which is not a bad thing. I really liked Black Flag. But it's amazing how much this one is just basically that game with a slightly different story. To the degree that the modern day portions of it, because you know the game's all about genetic memory and your these, takes place literally in the same floor of the same office building that the character was in Black Flag. Like, my character's boss this time is the same character that was my character's boss last time. Different character. But same boss and everything, so it's very weird parallels there. It's a little bit harder. The few mechanics they put in that are new are challenging to me, and there's not really a difficulty setting. But I'm doing okay, and I just like it. I just really like the Assassin's Creed games. I feel like they're probably pretty repetitive, and at this point, they're not trying nearly as hard as they used to, because it's just a cash machine for them. But and I have to space them out. Because I do play them really long, and usually by the end of one, I'm ready to be done. But they're just fun. Climbing around on buildings, solving weird conspiracies. This one took a while. The whole point of this one, though, is you're playing an assassin who defects from the assassins and becomes a Templar. And we finally did that, but we defected from the assassins and did nothing, and now we're hanging out with these people who are clearly Templars. But we seem to, like, not be aware of it, and that's really annoying me. But finally, we had dudes show up who, like, we knew before as Templars. And I'm like, okay, now nobody's. And so now we're finally like, okay, yeah, we know what's going on. And I'm like, thank goodness, because that was just annoying. I was like, either he's the stupidest assassin ever, or this is a lie. So that was good. But I still got my pirate ship and all that kind of shit. I guess it's not a pirate ship this time, but I'm doing a lot of pirating, so it kind of is. yeah, not too much else going on, I think. I'm currently reading the 10th Dresden Files book for The Producer right now. We are about 3/4 of the way through. It's one of my favorite. It used to be my favorite, and it still might be my favorite. She's getting into it. It's a good point of cohesion for the series, I feel like. It's a point at which a lot of characters all recur at once and interact in ways that make sense as you have grown to know these characters. So I like it for that. And Trish seems to be getting into it, and that's pretty cool. So I got promoted at work. Did I mention that? Trish got promoted at work. Did I mention that? All right, just wanted to have that covered. The world blurs for me nowadays. Who are you again?
You guys watch Supergirl?
No, it's on the DVR. We've been reading a lot of Dresden, so we're two behind, maybe three behind two. Now on Fargo.
Oh, okay.
We haven't watched any Supergirl, but it's sitting on there. I forget what else. There's a few things that are just waiting. Oh, we're way behind on Doctor Who, but it's all on there. No, haven't seen it yet. Also, I'm gonna check out in about another week Into the Badlands. Have you seen this thing? It's an AMC thing. And I think there's a plot. Like, I think it's sort of a post-apocalyptic sci-fi thing. But mostly, it's just lots of pretty people sword fighting. Like, a lot. So I don't really care what it's about. And they're all wearing vaguely like video game costumes. Like they all have, you know, they all have their unique outfits and stuff. And I'm just okay. Like, this is just going to be fun. Like, I don't even know. Apparently there is a plot and there's like a sci-fi explanation why like guns don't work anymore. So people have to use swords. I don't know. But it's just going to be, you know, post-apocalyptic setting and people fighting with swords. And I'm like, psh, I'll watch that for an hour a week. So we'll see how that goes down.
I wonder if next week, this time, I'll be talking about Fallout, because...
Oh, did you pre-order and everything?
Comes out, no, we didn't pre-order it, but it comes out on Tuesday. And
my friend was like, I may have bought Fallout already. And I was like, well, that's cool. You guys work through all the bugs and make sure they get reported and fixed.
I'm surprised we haven't pre-ordered it.
I'll reap those benefits in about a year.
There's if you pre-order it at a particular price point, there's a Pip-Boy that, like, you can wear.
Oh yeah.
And the Pip-Boy has a way you can put your phone in it.
Yeah.
And then there's an app so that the Pip-Boy basically works. It's your phone in there, but you can't tell. It just looks like the Pip-Boy's a real thing working on your wrist.
And that is them finally commercializing on something that's been around for years.
Well,
if you go online, I'm pretty sure you can figure out how to make your own. I've seen them in person.
Yeah.
Because people a while ago figured out we'd make one like that and then stick a smartphone in it. Yeah. And then somebody came up with the app. So yeah, I've seen them work, and you can make them stuff. They are pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. And I'm really surprised we haven't done that, but we're probably just going to wait. And it's not like they're going to run out of copies at the store or anything after the 10th.
I never I never play anything for like a year or two, but I also never pre-order. Because I'm like, you know what? Either there'll be plenty of them. And in fact, the more successful the game is, the more likely that if you wait 4 weeks, you can get it on Amazon for like $20. Or it'll be so shitty that it'll disappear, in which case you just got saved the trouble of playing a shitty game.
Well, I think it's going to be good.
I wouldn't begin to try and speculate how it'll compare to Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas. I can't imagine a world in which it's not worth playing. Like, they would have had to have fallen down so bad. And it's not like they rushed it out. Like, this has been hell. The guy who does the voice of 3Dog has been leaking about it for, like, 4 years or some shit. Like, this has been taking forever. So...
Well, I watched.
It could be disappointing for what we hope for, but there's no way it's not going to be good.
I watched a trailer for it today, and they gave away some plot details, and I had to stop and think, "Oh yeah, this is all relating to stuff that happened in 3."
In 3, I would imagine.
So it's not just
technically New Vegas was a spin-off.
Well, exactly. Even further back than you think.
But I don't know, because I never played 1 and 2, although I should, and I own them. And there was stuff in 3 that referred to those, and you didn't need to know it.
Well, but these are different kinds of things. I know exactly what you're talking about, but these are things that relate directly to things that happened at the end of 3, directly. Okay. And I'm surprised I even remembered what they were referring to.
I'm usually pretty good on those, so I'm going to be okay. But I assume we're going to find even yet another cache of the Enclave hiding somewhere, because that just always happens. Even in New Vegas. It was almost a joke in New Vegas, but even there we had some Enclave photos. Why won't they die? Seriously, if you screw up our recording, I will murder you. You're not very big. I could do it. What do you want? Do you want pets or what?
She just likes to sit on you.
She just likes to piss me off.
And stick her butt in your face.
I can hear her digesting her food. All right, let's hat.
All right.
Seriously, I can hear the gurgles in her tummy.
She just likes to have her butt in your face.
She just likes to have her butt every place.
Coffee wants to know.
Coffee.
You get to design a new museum for anything. What do you design?
Ooh.
What an interesting question. That is an incredibly interesting question.
That's a good one. That is a good one.
Very good.
I'll tell you what my first inclination is.
What's that?
I don't think it's my final answer, but my knee-jerk reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Is I want to design a museum of sex. Specifically, because I wanted to design one better than the actual one that exists in Amsterdam that I've been to.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. And this may... The problem is, the question becomes, do we have to make a economically feasible museum? Because the one in Amsterdam is very... Like, it has a lot of stuff. I'm glad I saw it and everything. But it's a lot of, like, self-referential. Like, isn't it funny that we have a museum of sex? And a lot of weird, like, sex kitsch and stuff like that. Which is interesting, but I'm like, that's a different thing. I'm way more curious about genuine cultural study of sexual practices and sexual social views throughout history and
in various places
throughout the world and stuff.
And dioramas.
A real one. Yeah. What it is I want to do, I don't want to do a funny, cute sex museum who's like, oh my God, look, we've got porn. Because like, you know, that, but I want to do a serious one because I find that fascinating and I feel like that's hardly ever touched on. No pun intended. But yeah, I don't feel like that's my final answer. Because what I really want is something that I think is awesome that I feel like doesn't have a museum.
What's that?
I don't know. I'm just saying that one's clearly
like a,
not it.
Like a comedy museum or a...
That could be a good one.
A vaudeville museum would be cool.
Role-playing game museum.
Yeah.
That would be nice. And I feel like that's a thing we can do now because there's enough of a... body of work.
Mm-hmm.
Enough decades have gone by, enough variations have happened. Here's the thing with the cats in the kitty condo. They've discovered that with different heights they can play what we call phantom paws, where you just stick your paw up around something and try and smack the other person. Now, this is not a good example of it. This is just Ezzy hitting Twiglet on the head and him not giving a damn. But they have done more interesting variations.
Let's see. Design a new museum for anything. Well, see, I'm thinking of things that would probably be better exhibits than actual museums, so that's no good.
And if you get one exhibit, stick it in an old photo hut booth that you can call it a museum. I've seen smaller ones. Yeah, I went to the sex museum in Amsterdam. I also went to the torture museum. Torture museum sucks. I'm just going to say. It's not that interesting. It's, yeah. That one's stupid. Sex museum was good, but it could be better. Amsterdam has a shit ton of museums.
Amsterdam?
As an insane. It might be like the most museums per capita or something. Mm. And a lot of them are like, here's a bunch of work from one of the Dutch masters. I mean, it's freaking Amsterdam, so they can... Some of them are really impressive museums. But yeah, there's just a ton of them.
Well, I actually really enjoy museums that are based on the location they're in.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of those in Iowa. You go to...
Such and such River Valley.
Yeah, yeah. You go to... there's a lot of towns... Melcher Dallas has one. There's a lot of towns in Iowa that have museums that are just based on their town or their part of the county or whatever, and they're so interesting. But I mean, for like a metropolitan museum that's got a particular theme, I just don't know. It's such a good question, but I don't really have a good answer.
I'm not opposed to them, and I've enjoyed a lot of them. Tend not to be into the location-based one. I'm into the what I think of as the other two sort of models, which are the well, I guess there's more too, but two big ones, the art museum, just straight up
mm-hmm.
art,
mm-hmm.
and what is commonly termed as the museums of science and industry.
Yep.
Those are fun, I guess. And then there's just museums of like, here's some unique stuff museums. Which don't necessarily have to do with the place. We made a motorcycle museum. Not necessarily anywhere where there's a lot of motorcycles. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it is, but that's not the point. It's not the place, it's motorcycles. So, you know.
I think...
House on the Rock. I'm not designing House on the Rock.
I think if someone said, all right, you can just make a museum and you can collect whatever you want and put whatever you want in it, I think I would probably want to curate like a mythological or religious things, but not, I don't just want, you know, Greco-Roman statuary or something like that. I mean, I want some artifacts from lots of places.
I think that may be the most disgusted tone anyone has ever used uttering the phrase Greco-Roman statuary.
I'm not saying that wouldn't have anything referencing Greek myth.
No, and I'm not saying that's not legitimate. I'm just saying I feel like no one in the history of the world has ever been like, Greco-Roman statuary. It totally makes sense in the context you're saying. It's a unique...
Because there are so many great stories. I mean, I even hesitate to say myth because that terminology seems to apply to very specific things. I'm talking about...
And there's a lot of weight to it nowadays. Yeah. Comparative religion is maybe more accurate. And I think that would be awesome.
Yeah.
If you very specifically make it as diverse as possible.
Yeah, that's what I want.
In no way is this construed as any particular faith dominant over the
others. Right.
Now we'll take you into the true religion room. No, you don't want that.
Yeah, like a whole wing of it, maybe most of it would have to be dedicated to, like, this section would have to be dedicated to this section of the African continent and all of the myths and legends and folk tales and whatever artifacts, you know. And then, I mean, because there's so much
here's what you do
that people don't even know about.
It's enormous, the facility you need for this.
Yeah.
Each floor represents the entire world.
The entire world?
Yes. So, like, floor one, whole world.
Okay.
At a specific time frame.
Oh.
Then you go up, and it's the next time frame.
Oh, that's a good idea.
But you need a huge place. But... And you've also got some rooms that were like, yeah, nobody lived here
at
this time.
But also if each floor represents the entire world at a particular time period, which I like that idea, also the square footage is going to be divvied up by, like, geographical area. See what I'm saying?
Okay.
So the majority of each floor is going to have to be dedicated to, you know, the African continent.
Now that's interesting, because the intuitive answer is that the floor space is proportionate to the number of worshippers at the time.
Well, yeah, population tied.
Yes.
Which does make sense, but
on the one hand, that slants it oddly, but on the other, it gets fascinating because the lower floors would be taken up by such things that then by the top is, like, really small, and vice versa, obviously. Like, you'd hit the point, like, two or three floors up, it's like, and here's the first Christian.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, and like you say, then they get a little more space as you go up. But the thing is...
I feel like this might have to be a building that gets bigger as it goes higher, which gets weird.
Well, I'm just saying that, and I don't really mean to keep bringing up Africa in particular, but it's such a huge continent,
and there are
so few things known about it, and there are so many amazing stories and religions and myths and folklore and stuff coming out of there that nobody even knows about. I certainly don't, and it's really hard to find sources on it too, because there's very few people that know anything about it.
I really wish that I did things sometimes, because I love... You're very sincere in your arguments and things. You don't always give super care to your phrasing, and sometimes it's awesome.
What do you mean?
Like, right now, we say Africa's a really big continent, and there's so few things known about it. I'm like, yeah, we know, like, 5 things about Africa, tops. That whole place is just a mystery. Nobody's been there. Nobody.
That's not what I mean. You know that.
I know exactly that's not what you mean. But that's what I'm saying. It's a phrasing issue. You're talking about in terms of the folklore and the history of the religion. There's a lot of stuff.
Specifically,
that
when I say we
don't know.
Yeah, we, I mean in the United States.
Yes. But what you actually said was it's a giant continent and we know so few things about it. Which is just awesome.
Which is true. The Americans know almost nothing about it. And I mean, even... It always amazes me when people say, "Oh, so and so's from Africa." It's like,
"Yeah, no,
what does that mean?
That shit anymore.
What does that mean?" I mean, nobody says I'm from North America. Nobody says I'm from the Western Hemisphere. Yeah. I mean, they say I'm from the United States. Sometimes even they say I'm from Iowa. But so and so's from Africa? That doesn't mean anything. So yeah, it's by we I meant specifically Americans. People in the United States. I didn't mean the whole planet doesn't know anything about it, because obviously lots of people live there.
You didn't mean anything about the continent completely. You didn't mean
knowledge of Africa. That's right. I didn't mean that. I meant specifically.
Takes me back to my point. What you actually said was it's a really big continent, and we know so few things about it, which, as I've established, I know that's not what you meant. That's what the listeners know that's not what you meant. It's still funny
but
as hell.
But here's the thing about that is, you know, that frustrates me about doing a podcast is when I'm talking to you, I'm talking to you.
Yes.
Right? If we weren't doing the podcast, you might not even have noticed that I said it that way. You were thinking about how someone who doesn't know me or is a first-time listener.
No, I think I still would. And in fact, actually, you should be thankful to me, because had I not said anything, it's possible people out there might have construed it. The fact that I drew attention, I pointed out the fact that that is clearly not what you
But meant. The point is, the reason I'm sometimes so imprecise in the way I say things is because I'm talking to someone who knows me, and I don't want to be work hard at talking to a person when, like, I just met them.
You get more credit for being an expert on William than I do. But in my limited decade and a half or whatever of knowledge, I stand by my statement that sometimes you're unaware of phrasing more often than the average person I deal with. Which I think is why you frequently have difficulty in getting your point across. You say something and people say, oh, you're saying this. And you say, no, that's not what I'm saying, because you didn't phrase it right. And
maybe that's true.
And sometimes it results in hilarity.
Maybe you think it's hilarious, but I don't.
Yes, and I'm right. So
okay. But anyway, that's my answer. Did you think of one besides?
It needs to be something I think is cool, and it needs to be something that I feel like doesn't get enough attention. Doesn't have its own museum. I think I gotta stick with role-playing games as a museum. I think that would be pretty
awesome. That's a really cool idea.
I like it. I don't know that it would be economically feasible, depending on the location. But. All right. Another thing?
Sure.
From Hat? I haven't put you off with this whole not knowing things from Africa, right? No. You seem a little off now.
It's cool.
Right. Huh. Well, this one's anonymous, to say the least. I'll describe this to you. Quite literally, this is what is on the card.
Okay.
The word nature, with a capital N.
Mm-hmm.
The abbreviation for versus VS period.
Mm-hmm.
And then the word nurture, also with a capital N. And then a question mark.
Yep.
That's it. So, in response, I'm going to say yes. Nature versus nurture? Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously, I mean, it seems like they're making reference to a classic debate.
Constant, yes.
In terms relating to human behavior, most specifically. And when I first became aware that there even was such a debate, I was pretty baffled by it, really, because they didn't seem to be, they didn't seem to be concepts that you could argue like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Why they're not mutually exclusive, I guess what I'm saying. Why can't it be both? You know what I'm saying?
And that's just a human thing. We got a duality. It's sort of like, who's the good parent, you know? There always has to be a good parent and a bad parent. Even if they're both very good,
it's like,
one has to be worse than the other.
It's like someone saying, should I wear a shirt or should I wear pants?
You go.
You can wear both. You can wear a shirt and some pants. Or one or the other,
like,
I guess.
There's a specific thing. Well, and they also want an answer. And it's harder when you get into a combination of saying, they want to say, like, no, your genetics caused this. How you were raised causes this. And that's the kind of answer they want. I find it fascinating. In a wholly academic sense, I find the concept fascinating. I like to think about it. I like to theorize. I like to read theories, although usually those have an agenda in them and they just piss me off. But I like to play around with the concepts. With the understanding that the end is, so what? It is what it is. As I have said, as I have brought up on this show, that I am ambivalent over nature versus nurture when it comes to sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And I embrace that ambivalence because I don't think it matters. People should be able to do whatever the fuck they want.
Exactly. That's the way I feel about it.
And that's how I feel about almost everything that they put under these categories.
Agreed.
But I find it fascinating. And if we really could sort of conclude, that would be interesting. Again, academically, I don't think it should or would have any impact going forward. But the real answer is we don't know far too much. There's far too much involving genetic stuff, and there's far too much involving early childhood development that we straight up don't know already. There is the factor that most things are probably a combination in various ratios that we couldn't measure, because it'd be infinite different combinations, as you point out. And on top of that, it's a statistical game. So at best, we could come up with statistically aggregate information about it. It would still say essentially nothing about the individual.
Well, also, there's doesn't appear to be a linear relationship. For example, especially if you bring epigenetics into it, one affects the other.
Epigenetics ruins everything.
One affects the other back and affecting the other. So there's the causal, this linear causal relationship between the two things themselves or elements within the two things. I mean, it's not. It's neat and tidy. There are these circles and cycles, and so it's just not linear. You just can't simplify it into this. Well, this leads to this, leads to this in a line, and that's it.
Yeah.
Nothing ever turns back on another thing, or crosses over into something else. It's so much more complicated than that.
The producer has recently been looking into epigenetics. Epigenetics really ruins everything.
If you want,
I understood about how genetics works, like, gets thrown out the window immediately with epigenetics, and I'm amazed that I'm just now learning this stuff, this concept that outside stimuli can affect your genetics in a way that can genuinely be passed on to future generations. That's right. Amazing to me. I mean, fascinating, and just really, it completely blows this whole debate out of the water.
In a way, it does. At least it shows how much more complicated it is.
It's just gone there. Interesting thing, though, and this is second or third hand. I don't have a resource for it, but I know enough about the deaf community that I consider this credible. So, the deaf community is one of those. Like, there is a faction, for lack of a better term. As people have said before, there is the deaf with a small d. That is people that have hearing impairment.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the deaf with a large D, which is a lobbying organization, a faction, a societal group.
A culture, really.
Yes.
Subculture, if you want.
And but... and to that end, so we're not quite at some Gattaca-level shit here. We're not quite at the point where we're designing our babies. But we are at the point where we can pinpoint some stuff in the genetic makeup and in the genome. Such that if you are, say, doing in vitro fertilization and you have several viable embryos, you might get to find out some things about them, and you might get to pick if you want the one that's selected for this or the one that's selected for that. And these are things that are happening, and apparently there are circumstances where deaf parents are specifically selecting for the same congenital conditions they have that cause them to be deaf.
Right, because they don't see it as any kind of handicap.
They don't see it as any kind of handicap, and they see it as a way to connect with their child. This is fascinating to me, and I'm not judging anybody on this, but there is a gut socialization in me that is like, holy shit, that's like, there's a part of me that wants to scream child abuse before the child's even born.
Right, but I mean,
the same thing that like you always want to maximize the choices that the kid can have, but the argument would be But by not having them deaf, you're eliminating that choice. It's not like later they're going to go.
But how is that different? Let's say they pick a kid that can hear, but that the kid is likely going to have blue eyes instead of brown eyes.
Yep.
I mean, is it really that different?
Well, someone would say issues of facility, but that would be the argument there, is the blue eyes and the brown eyes is not going to impact how they live their life.
I have no idea how it impacts anything. Has anyone ever studied it, really? I mean, the point is, the bigger question here is there something questionable ethically in making these choices that we used to not really have a choice about?
Yeah, yeah. I would put it more on par with the decision to circumcise.
Oh.
Because the most common argument you get in this day and age for circumcising a kid is, I don't want him coming to me as the father later and wanting to know why his stuff doesn't look like his dad's stuff. I hear that all the time.
That's weird. To me.
And it's the most common.
No offense to anybody who thinks that way, but I think that's a little weird.
And it's self-propagating. It's like, okay, so you did that. So then he feels the same way with his kid. So then we have, you know, many, many generations of circumcision purely because we didn't want a small child to be weirded out that his penis looked different than his dad.
Well, it's because you don't want to explain it. I mean, the kids aren't weirded out. They're curious. Well, yeah,
they don't freak out that their mom looks different.
What's going to weird them out is when you have a look on your face like, oh my God, how do I answer this question? Yeah. Then the kid's weirded out. Yeah. So, yeah, that has nothing to do with helping the kid. It's because you don't want to explain it. But I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. I mean, this has been on the horizon for a long time about, you know, this was something that a lot of people were concerned about, and certainly I was, when you had a lot of homosexual people and advocates for the rights of homosexual people insisting that, well, it's genetic. So the person can't help it, so stop being on their back about it. I said, is this really the argument you want to make? Because, first of all, you don't know. The research really isn't out on that. But whether it is or isn't, is that what you want in the front of people's minds?
Yes.
Because
the argument then is, of course I wouldn't be gay if I could choose.
Because what you're really telling people who think homosexuality is wrong is, hey, there might be a way to isolate this gene and have a test done when I'm pregnant and I could abort my fetus if it's going to be gay.
And you're characterizing homosexuality as a degenerative condition or a disease.
Well, or you're maybe. Not,
the implication there is I can't choose because, of course, I wouldn't be gay if I could. Because and that is the argument, because you don't ever have anybody going around saying, well, some of it's genetic, but some of it is by choice. And I'm one of those who's by choice. No. Anybody who says that is like, I can't help it, which, whether it's true or not, is not your front runner argument here. Because you know what? If you could help it, you still can do that.
Well, my point was always, it shouldn't matter. It's nobody's business whether or not you're homosexual. Yeah. If it was a choice, why would that be such a bad thing? Why does that matter?
And that's where it gets weird here, because it's parents choosing for their children, which everybody is in favor of, except when it becomes a really big choice, and then it all depends on how they judge the parents.
And then the question is, what are we calling a really big choice? I mean, because that's what happens. We say, well, it's okay to do it for these, if you're selecting for these traits, but if you're selecting for these traits, it's wrong. And there's a lot of arbitrary stuff that can get thrown in there. Okay, so would anybody in the United States suggest that it's wrong to select for traits that are very likely going to make the kid a star athlete? I mean, a lot of people would say, oh, no, you should do that. That's going to be good. Yeah, but I personally am not convinced that that's a good or bad thing. It's just, to me, I don't know. When you start putting choices in people's hands that they didn't have before, choices that previously belonged to, for lack of any other better term, chance. Okay, mm-hmm. if you want to say in the hands of God, say that. Right. But at the very least, the hands of chance. You know, chance isn't biased, right? Chance doesn't have an agenda. you can get mad at Chance for dealing you a bad hand in life, but that's very different than being mad at your parents because they deliberately selected the genetic signature that you have, and it's not what you want.
Yep.
Like, okay, so they want me to be a star athlete, let's say. But it turns out I'm not interested in athletics. I know that I could be good at it because I've got all these genetic advantages. Yeah. But what I'd really love to do is I'd love to be an astrophysicist. But man, the math to me is really super hard. Why didn't they pick that? Because that can happen. So if I'm a parent, right, and if I was in this position to choose, I'd be thinking that stuff through. And I'd be saying, I am not going to, find some way to randomly grab this thing. I am not going to sit and pick a trait. No way, because that's not going to be on me.
No.
I mean, it's a big enough choice that I'm having a kid. That's a huge choice. Yeah. That you're going to force this person to be in the world. That's a big enough choice. To make any other choice for that human being is,
of course,
way too much.
Then you're in trouble, though. Because if this becomes easy and readily available and becomes the norm, then choosing not to do it
is the same as choosing something. That's right. I know.
And then it's just terrible, which is why
I don't
understand all you breeders.
And you can be held accountable to that too. Like,
absolutely. Because at a certain point, if again, we're getting way out there dystopian, but if it becomes commonplace, there's going to be common things, at least within a given society, that are normal. People are going to choose, assuming they can, healthy and no congenital birth defects and smart and whatever else.
Not gay.
And so if you have a kid random and they end up with one of those congenital birth defects, they're going to be really pissed at you.
That's right.
Even though you didn't pick it.
That's right.
So again, don't breed. If I can convince any of you guys, don't have children, because it's going to be a dystopia, and it will not be your fault unless you have kids, and don't blame you. We're overtime, so.
That's really horrible advice. I'm just going to say that.
I like it.
Well, I know you like it. Maybe you like it because it's horrible. I don't know.
I don't think it's that horrible to tell people not to have kids.
Just wholesale don't have kids.
Absolutely. I want to see what happens for a while. Whole society stops breeding for a while. Let's see what happens. Maybe it'll work out. Or maybe we'll all die.
That the real trick is to have kids, and if you raise them in a sensible way, they'll be grateful for what they have and not complain about what they don't have. Because that's the real problem, isn't that you had a kid that has particular traits. It's whether or not a person can look at their life and say, hey, I've got these things, and maybe I don't have those things over there, but these things are pretty cool, and I'm grateful for those things, so I'm not going to sit and waste my life crying about the things I don't have. I'll enjoy my life appreciating the things I do have.
I feel like you clearly haven't looked at those things. Those things are awesome. I am so mad at my parents. They didn't give me those things.
Yeah, like as if you actually believe, and I know you don't, these things have some kind of inherent value other than what we give them.
No, I 100% agree with you, except in that you presumably think humanity's capable of doing that, and I don't. So I'm like, humanity, just stop trying, because you're bad at it. By which I mean,
existing. So really, exactly. Really, you're saying that
humans are the worst. I've
humanity
been saying that
can
for a
just
long time.
Go the way of the dodo, absolutely. And that would probably be the best thing.
I was
happen.
So pissed that when I realized that because I have awesome nieces and nephews, I have to worry about the future. I was this close to say, you know what? I can just fucking kill the environment, because after me, what do I care? And then I was like, God damn it. There are actual young people I care about now. Shit. Ruined everything. We're way over time. Go to the blog. Tell William how he's wrong. TheMagicalTalkingHat.com. Also, write into the hat, TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Excuse me. And listen every week. And like us on Facebook. And tell us if you could self-select for your child's genetics, what kind of athlete would you want them to be?
Yeah. yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.